Hello, everyone, and welcome to NWR Connectivity episode 311. I'm your host, John Reardon, and I am joined by Neil Lanahan.
Hi, are you ready to talk more Zelda? Because that's all we do on this show.
I've started Majora's Mask.
And me too.
And like, I'm not going to say a lot about it because we'll do like 2 hours on it later. But my God, I love Majora's Mask.
I sometimes
question whether I'm like, is it actually better than Ocarina of Time or do I just have nostalgia for it? And then I play them back to back. I'm like, no, this one's better.
I mean, my thing is that like I have all of this nostalgia for Ocarina of Time, like because I
true you have the opposite of me.
Yeah, and Majora's was a game that like I borrowed a friend's copy and got freaked out by the time limit, and then like play. I think I got to Woodfall, and like that was I was like, nope, not doing. I don't like the time thing. Although I don't have a memory of knowing about the Song of Inverted Time when I was a kid, which is weird because the friend that I borrowed it from was like a big Nintendo Power guy. So I feel like he probably would have told me.
The scarecrow that tells you is on the primary quest path. Like, you can't not see him. But yeah, because I've had conversations with Matt about that before on like whether that's a hidden thing. And I'm like, nah, it's like he's right in front of you when you walk into the observatory. He's the first thing you see.
Yeah, but I also think when I played it the first time, I went to the observatory once. Mm-hmm. When it was still like it probably just was like, oh, I'll go back to that scarecrow later, and then like didn't do that. And that because I think I also like didn't do what I did in this playthrough, which is after I went through that first run, I just like did as much as I could in Clock Town. I got four heart containers or heart pieces, and I have five hearts going into Woodfall.
But we shouldn't talk about that.
Yeah, that's whetting your appetite for a month or so.
There will be a big ol' episode on that. If you haven't listened to our gigantic episode on Ocarina of Time, do that. But today we're going to talk about a whole bunch of different games. We've got some listener mail, and it's going to be a full episode. So let's get started with Neil. You were given an early look at our pink friend, but not Jigglypuff.
Yeah, but so by the time you listen to this, it'll be old news, but a Kirby and the Forgotten Land demo is coming up on the Switch eShop on Thursday, March 3rd. We're recording this the day before, so I don't know what the reaction to it is going to be. For all I know, it's going to come out and like people are going to be like, "Oh, Nintendo's terrible."
Everyone hates it.
But I got to Nintendo invited us to watch them play the demo. Events in COVID times are weird.
Yeah. Suddenly Nintendo is like that friend who like you go over to their house, but they don't want you to play the game. They just want you to watch them play the game.
Here's the funny thing that I appreciate. It's like it's a fun way to do it. So I guess to just explain the demo's three stages long. You probably already know this because it's already available. It's all early stuff. But during the demo, I think it was on Zoom. They had polls for it was like, oh, like, should Kirby go right or left? Should Kirby use this power up or this power up? And then like, you know, people who were, but it was only me and one other member of the press. So I think one of the, like the PR people also voted because there were definitely three votes. It broke ties.
I would love if, you guys just voted for opposite direction and Kirby just slowly turns to look at the camera.
Yeah.
What have you done? I can't progress now.
I can't have ice and cutter in this game. But so, like, I mean, it was, tried to get some engagement. But this game looks fantastic, honestly. And, like, the mouthful mode stuff is hilarious. I did one thing that stood out to me, and if you saw any of our coverage of the demo that went up, this is, like, the first comment that I make. When you are in mouthful mode, like, you'll, like, drive around with the car or whatever, but then, like, there's going to probably come a time where you have to dump the car. And the button for that is spit, which is just like so visceral.
I'm just imagining Kirby kind of barfing the car like a cat working out a hairball, just
But one thing that did stand out to me and in this demo is from looking at this game is that like, okay, yes, it is a Kirby game in 3D, but aside from that, like it's a Kirby game. Like you could look at like mouthful mode is essentially the mech in Planet Robobo. Like that, I mean, that's basically, it's kind of what it is in the game. I do think from what we've seen of Forgotten Land, there is a greater potential for it going a lot deeper. One, because they have those missions in every level. And you, basically, there's a short introductory level, Downtown Grassland, which is a more expansive level that, like, the Nintendo rep said, like, this is more representative of what the full, like, all the levels in the game are. And then there's a boss fight. That is its own stage. But there's five missions in the level. One of them is just get to the end of the stage. And the other ones, like, aren't really told what they are. Like, they are question marks until you happen to come across them.
Oh.
And, like, it's basically, like, if you... there's like a crack in the wall, like, oh, go hit that crack open. Okay, that's one of the secret missions. It was find this hidden area, and then you get a Waddle Dee. That then you can bring the Waddle Dee back to your hub town and unlock stuff there. The fact that you can evolve copy abilities is really cool. Did not get to see that, but that's one of the things where I think that's where the potential for this game to be, like, bigger and better than your normal Kirby game. But at its core, I think the Kirby and the Forgotten Land, like, if you didn't really care for, like, Triple Deluxe or Robobo or Star Allies, I don't know if this is really going to change your mind all that much. It might be a slightly different flavor, but, like, this is a Kirby game still, guys.
Yeah, that'll be it. So speaking as somebody who has really only played, like, all of my experience with Kirby is like Super Nintendo and back, and a little bit of stuff on, like, DS. And I guess, like, Canvas Curse, or not Canvas Curse.
Yeah. Rainbow Curse?
No, not either of those.
Sweet Spot, Epic Yarn.
Epic Yarn. There we go. I could only think of Crafted World, but that's a different thing.
That's the Yoshi game that's secretly one of the better Yoshi games, but everybody hates it.
I never finished it, but I liked what I played. I should go back to that. I
thought about replaying that game. I really like that game. Game Club.
Ooh, I'd do a Yoshi Game Club. Because then I could talk about how Yoshi's Island is bad. And, like, that'd be fun.
That's honestly gut check. How I would rank Yoshi games. Crafted World might be my favorite.
My favorite would be, it'd be 64. Story. Yeah.
Story's definitely up there. Like, I think Yoshi's Island is overrated, but not terrible. Like, I sit between the worlds of the people who hate Yoshi's Island, that small but proud people, and most of the world that thinks that
was game. That a short joke?
No, is Seren short? Because I know you and Seren are two people that I have talked to that, like, hate Yoshi's Island.
I don't know how tall Seren is, so I can't tell holds true.
No, I mean, like, with Yoshi's Island, like, the fact that, like, there's the incessant baby Mario cry whenever you get hit, like, that is hell. And I also just, that same friend who lent me the copy of Majora's Mask, my first experience playing Yoshi's Island was on his Super Nintendo, and he kind of, like, rammed it into my 8-year-old head that, like, oh, the right way to play this game is to 100% it. So that makes any replay that I've ever done of Yoshi's Island kind of maddening.
Was this friend Justin Berube? Were you secretly neighbors?
They've met, and they've fought in games before. so it's been epic over the years. but that was the kind of thing that, like, I've kind of broken myself of that. But it also, the fact of, like, trying to 100% that game, like, it's kind of frustrating because of the fact that, like, you need to do everything in one run in the Super Nintendo game. They kind of clean that up in later games, which I appreciate. I think Yoshi's New Island isn't as bad as everybody says it is, though the music is crap.
I was just going to say that it's fine as long as you turn it down. So hearing the same, they wrote one song for that game.
Yeah.
Which is such a bold move.
My thing.
It's a decent song, but
I mostly played that game on mute.
Me too. Yep. I did, like, finish that
intentional
one.
Yeah, no, I think I reviewed that for Nintendo Force, maybe.
I would give it, from this has been a long time, from memory, I feel like I would give that game, like, a 7.
Maybe a
6.5.
I probably gave it a 7 or...
Yeah.
It wasn't
bad, but it didn't do anything.
I usually round up, maybe it was a 7.5. I don't know.
Yeah, it just didn't do anything to rise above, like,
I enjoyed
low
it.
End...
Yeah.
Fine. Yeah.
At the bottom of my list is Yoshi's Island DS. That game is a tire
that game
fire.
Sucks.
Yeah. And I think Woolly World is overrated.
But once again, I think I would put that at a similar level to New Island. I think it's inoffensive, but
Yeah, I can agree with that. I think Woolly World looks fantastic.
Oh yeah.
But my beef with that is something that is also my beef with pretty much, I think, all the Yoshi's Island games do this, is how it's like, oh, you have to walk under the specific platform to reveal the hidden cloud that you would have had no idea was there unless you ran through every single square inch of the level, which is just not fun, especially when you were broken at a young age and have to 100% it. It's gonna loop back to what our final topic might be,
right?
It's all therapy.
Yeah, Neil ran out of money to pay his therapist, so now that's what connectivity is. Yep. What I was going to say,
so Kirby,
before we started talking about Yoshi, is that as someone whose experience with Kirby is not remotely modern, so I don't really have experience with Robobobobobobo or Star Allies.
I actually played a couple levels of Robobobobobobo, and it's still great.
That's what I've heard. But as someone who doesn't have experience with those, I'll be curious to see, because I'm going to play Forgotten Land, and I'll be curious to see, like, will the things that for you, where you would look at it and go, ah, yeah, I mean, it's cool, but that's just Kirby. For me, will those things feel fresh and new?
My gut would probably say yes. And I also do think it's one of those things where this seems to happen with certain Nintendo franchises every couple years, where they like hit the zeitgeist in a good way, and then they actually follow through with the marketing. Like, I think Nintendo and like Wii U 3DS era, they were good at kind of hitting that zeitgeist. It's just that then nobody really played the games.
Well, I mean, that's the Wii U in its entirety, is lots of games that turn out are really, really good if you can get people to play them. Like, that's been the Switch porting process.
Yeah, but like with the Switch, it might be on the record, I hope, because I said this a lot, at least in private, that the Switch launch, like, they had to pitch a marketing perfect game in order for 2017 to work as well as it did. And honestly, they did. And a lot of that was because they found the right way how to present and pitch those games. And I think that's what they're doing with Forgotten Land, in a way that they did not with Star Allies, because I think Star Allies was a game that, I mean, I think it still sold pretty well. Like, it definitely was over 1 million. I don't think it was that like jaw dropping, and it had a lot of like fantastic DLC, but as far as just like anecdotally from like, we did a Switch top 10 list, I don't think anybody nominated that game. That's not to say it's bad. I think it's pretty good. I think it gets too much shit. But I don't think Star Allies didn't, you know, reinvigorate the series in the same way that, like, you know, Odyssey did for 3D Mario, or Breath of the Wild did for Zelda, or New Horizon did for Animal Crossing. You have all these kind of mega hits, even Luigi's Mansion 3. I mean, I think that's over 10 million units sold.
Yeah, whereas I know that Kirby's, I should play that someday.
I should get farther than like the first couple hours.
I was really hyped for it and then just never bought it.
Yeah, I got it. And then I played a little bit. I kept on hearing how long it was. And the fact that, like, it's like, oh, the combat is Luigi's Mansion combat, all right.
Yeah.
I'll be in the mood for it at some point. My kid really likes watching it and messing around with it. So that's kind of been most of my...
Maybe this Halloween will be the Luigi's game Mansion club. 3 Halloween. Yeah. That'd be a short game club.
I mean, all three great games. Like, Luigi's Mansion 1 is just a really good, tightly packed game. Dark Moon's awesome.
I love Dark Moon. Like, I went into that game expecting nothing and was like, holy crap, I adore this game.
I was extremely hyped for that game, and it did not let me down. Also, like, Scream Scraper, which I didn't get into on Switch either, but I played it a lot in Dark Moon. Anyway, Kirby.
Yes, Kirby.
I think Nintendo is doing a very good job of marketing this game. I'm kind of curious how, like, the, you know, response to it is going to be when it comes out. So far, like, everything's been incredibly positive about it. And I'm really looking forward to the final game, because it does seem like it is kind of a step up in maybe complexity and depth from the past couple of Kirby games, even if it, like I said, like, it feels like it's the next step in that. This isn't some like, oh, they made Kirby in the fourth dimension. Like, no, this is 3D open environments, but it's still very similar structure to how Star Allies and Robobo and Triple Deluxe played.
Yeah, I suspect they're going to get a bunch of new people. And then, you know, hopefully those people will go back, and maybe it'll make me go back and play the old games. Who knows?
I do have a note that I'll just share from watching the demo. So they have the Gory Mondo, the angry gorilla. I think he was in like one of the first trailers. So that's the boss fight in here. You have the option. I think you can pick between ice bomb and sword. That was one of our votes. Ice won. So here is my raw note from watching this, which is you can straight up just fucking freeze him, install him from doing an attack. Holy shit, this rules. Because it was like, I didn't expect it, because they're like, oh, yeah, you can use the ice attack on him. And they get up close. And like, then you just see like Gory Mondo just start to freeze. And like, he moves very slowly and like doesn't execute the attack. And like, if they do that with like a lot of the different abilities for all the bosses, that's kind of awesome, because it does add that, like, I wonder what bomb and sword, what you could have done to that boss differently.
Yeah, that it's chemistry. Breath of the Wild has truly ruined everything.
Yep. But yeah, that's enjoy the Kirby demo. I know I'm looking forward to playing it when it goes up. And even more excited to play the final game. I have a feeling I'm going to play that demo and just like be like tapping my foot like the Sonic waiting animation for 3 weeks.
Speaking of things that I waited for and then realized I didn't need to have been waiting for. So I saw a tweet the other day from the developers of Aztec, Forgotten Gods. Is that what it's called? Or am I thinking of Kirby now?
I think that's it.
Forgotten Gods. Yes. Okay. So I saw a tweet from them saying the game's coming out in 9 days. And I was like, oh, I put in a request for a review code for that a while back. That ought to be coming soon. I should double check to make sure I didn't miss that. And so I go into my email, search for the game, and sure enough, there's a review code. I'm like, awesome. And then I look at the date on it, and it's February 1st. So I have apparently had that game sitting in my inbox for a month. And if for some reason anyone from Lienzo or Stride PR is listening to this, I appreciate your effort to have me not rush to finish this game. You are what we should all aspire to be, but I have failed you. So I started Aztec, which is from the developers who did Mulaka, which was a game that I very much enjoyed. That was back in like 2017, 18 on Switch.
Yeah. It was an early indie world game, or I think it was still an indie spotlight back then.
Yeah. It was kind of like a adventure combat, vaguely Zelda-ish game, inspired by like the folklore of a Mexican tribe that was just really cool. And I did an interview with the guys that made it and talked to them about like the cultural background of the game. And it was really awesome. So Aztec has been one that I've been looking forward to for a while. And the whole premise of the game is that it's this kind of alternate future where the Aztec Empire didn't fall. And instead like continued to evolve into this like technological superpower.
Hence the Aztec, like technology.
Yes, Aztec with T-E-C-H. And you play as this girl who finds this like ancient gauntlet that lets her fly around and punch things really hard, and also like talk to a god that now lives in her head. And she has to defend the Aztec Empire from these evil monster god things that have now been let loose. And it's the whole game, like the gauntlet itself that you're using, its main thing is that it lets you like have like a jetpack. And so you can fly around with it. And so like all of the combat is aerial. It's not like a Spider-Man game, but that kind of thing where like the entire, like you can walk on the ground, but you're going to spend 90% of the game either like climbing up a building or just in the air flying around. So it has a very strange feeling. The closest point of comparison that I have, and this is going to sound like an insult, but Aztec does it way better. The closest point of comparison I have is Rodea the Sky Soldier. This is better than that by like a large margin, because this feels like they had kind of that like parallel thinking of what that game wanted to do of like flying around really fast and punching things and doing all this like weaving through rings that give you boosts and things like that. But whereas Rodea was like, you can fly around and go through these rings, and the player goes, why? And Rodea goes, I don't know. Aztec like has a purpose and like weaves that into like boss design, and it's really cool. I will say, I have, at least playing handheld, I haven't noticed this as much playing docked. On handheld, I have noticed some decent frame rate hits when you're going up against some of the big bosses, which is a bit of a problem because it's a very fast-paced game. But overall, it's just one of those games that has a lot of, like, whatever it lacks in, like, that AAA polish, because it is very much a scrappy indie game, it makes up for in just weird, cool ideas. And is much more like story driven than Moolaka was. Like there is a lot of dialogue that's well written. You can take it as a good thing or a bad thing that there's a lot of it, but it's well written. The story is interesting. The main character is genuinely compelling, and it's a cool game. It comes out on the 10th, I believe, of March. So like in another week.
That sounds right.
And I'll have a review then. But yeah, first impressions, good. I should be done with the game by now if I could read my email. I hope that this game isn't so long that I needed a month to play it. That will be awkward.
So yeah, that game seems neat. Like, I wound up not playing Moolaka. Not because, I mean, I remember your review and it seemed fun.
Neil doesn't play anything I review. That's a secret that you all need to know. I review games and Neil goes, oh, that looks cool. And then he never plays them. Rebel Galaxy Outlaw.
I got you to play Super Mega Baseball, didn't I?
I played it once. I played the demo and was like, boy, I do not jive with the sport. And then I didn't play
it. I do own Moolaka. I know that. I just have
to. Do you really? Okay. Yeah. You should play it. It's not that long.
I'll do it in a week with the time that I don't have.
There you go.
But I have been playing a game that is also coming out on March 10th and also has an embargo around the same time as Aztec. And that is Chocobo GP, which is the 20 years in the making sequel to Chocobo Racing on the PlayStation 1.
You demanded it.
We've all been waiting. There actually, I did look into it that there was a Chocobo Racing announced for the 3DS.
Really?
That never came out.
No.
But that's, yeah.
They should just do Chocobo Racing Remake. That like you think is going to be Chocobo Racing, but then really it's like kind of a different sequel. Plot.
It's the gritty future in which Chocobo is fallen.
Yeah.
So Chocobo GP is, I mean, at its core, it's just a really serviceable kart racer. Like it's definitely, it doesn't have the superior handling that Mario Kart 8 does, but it's definitely among the better kart racers that I've played because it does have a good enough handling. The drift system's like pretty solid, and the items, the way that they introduce them in the story mode, and even just their function. I have this problem with a lot of kart racers where they're like, look at all our weird items that like I don't know what they do. So then I just have this item, and it's like it's like a diamond shaped donut. What does that mean? And then I do it.
I need you to draw. Like, I need you to draw a picture of whatever you just described.
But like, yeah, sometimes it's like, okay, this is a snowman item. Does that mean I like drop it behind me? Do I have a snowball that I have no idea? And that's what Chocobo GDP does, is that like you kind of have to play the story mode because there's not a lot unlocked when you first start the game. But the story mode like slowly introduces the different items that it's Magisite, as is, you know, it's referencing Final Fantasy games. And like there's stuff where it's like, oh, there's a fireball, there's a boost. There's like a tornado thing that you can send out on the track. You can freeze people. The theme of games that I've played or seen people play is you can freeze things. But there is some wild stuff where like one of the last Magisite that you unlock is Bahamut, which is like a summon. And like it is funny because the story mode is also legitimately pretty funny. Because it's very like saccharine sweet and over the top, and the voice acting is like good but grating because it is it's like a cartoon show, like the, but like a very high energy, you know, high pitched voice characters, et cetera, et cetera. But there's a lot of pretty good jokes throughout it. Like there's a Chocobo character named Camilla, and there's a character named Camilla's Pa that is, you know, it's her father. But like there's a lot of like almost, it's almost relentless how many jokes they make about like, don't you have an actual name? He's like, no, yeah. I'm just Camilla's paw. Like, what are you talking about, guys? Like, there's a lot of like very like goofy humor like that, like some fourth wall breaking meta stuff where it's like, because you have Final Fantasy characters legitimately show up in the story. Like, there's an area where it's Terra from Final Fantasy VI in Esper form. Then you have another one where it's Steiner and Vivi from Final Fantasy IX. And there's references to those games. There's like at one point where like, I forget which character it is, like makes a crack about how like, oh, like you can ask your, you know, ask your parents what this, what like the joke that we just made means, because it's the joke about Final Fantasy. Like, mm-hmm. it's a lot of like goofy stuff like that. And then the story itself is kind of nonsense, but it just, it has a like a weird chaotic energy to it that, yeah. that I felt like just, it was funny to kind of experience. The story mode itself isn't anything like to write home about as far as what the content is. It's a lot of races that you either need to finish first or like finish in like the top three or top four or beat a specific character. But it introduces you to the fundamentals. You can play it on two different difficulty levels, that it's essentially like 50cc and 100cc. Mm-hmm. Like the beginner difficulty level feels super slow in a way that I feel like 50cc in Mario Kart does not feel. But once I realized that I did not have to beat the basic difficulty level, I just switched over to the other difficulty level, and it like picked up from where I was in the story mode, which was nice. And that felt a lot better. I do feel when you get hit by an item, you like stop dead too much, which was a little frustrating, because I'm accustomed to in Mario Kart games like getting screwed by like getting hit by an item late. But like it would be like I would be in first place, get hit by one item, and then like be in seventh. Whereas in Mario Kart, for that to happen, I'd like get hit by like a blue shell, then a green shell, then a banana peel falls in front of me. Like I would need to have multiple items hit me in order for me to go to from first to last.
Mm-hmm. And they will, but
yeah, no, like that happens. But like at least like that, it's not like I got frozen by ice. Now I lost.
Now you know how it feels to be that gorilla.
But it's a totally fine kart racer. There is one kind of ace in the hole about it that I've not made the call. You know what? I should make it now. I think I'm going to leave it unscored because there's a mode of this game that is not accessible right now. Well, I guess in theory it's there, but there's not enough people to do it. There is like a Chocobo GP mode where it's a 64 racers can go into it, and then you keep playing races of 8 people, and if you finish in the top 4, you move on to the next round.
Okay.
And then when you get to the end, you'll have like a race of 8 people, and the winner will win the Chocobo GP. Huh. That actually sounds really cool. And there's a light mode. There's a light version, a free version of the game that will be up on the eShop when the game comes out, where people can compete in Chocobo GP. I'm trying to get confirmation on like what else is in there. I think it might literally just be access to Chocobo GP, like a couple characters.
Yeah. So no story or anything like that, but just the online mode.
Yeah, I have not, as of recording, I've not gotten confirmation on that, and like the review's going up in like 6 hours, so probably not getting confirmation on that. But to my knowledge, the light mode at least has Chocobo GP access, which that could be a really cool mode.
Yeah, I checked that out.
And I kind of understand why in the review process, I don't think Chocobo GP is the kind of game where you're like, we're going to organize 64 people doing this online. It's not that marquee of a release, but definitely want to check that out, because that's where some of the legs of this game could come from. Some of the legs from this game is also going to come from season passes that come out after the game. They say there will be a new season every month or two. At launch, everybody will get, I think it's like 800 mithril, which is one of the three currencies in this game. Currently, I only have access to one of them that I get tickets from doing races and stuff. And I use those to purchase like some alternate colors, certain characters, unlockable characters, and like different carts and stuff. But there's mithril, which you pay real money for. Which is weird, because this is I think it's a $40 video game. Either way, it is a video game that you pay money for, and then in order to do the season pass content you have to pay money. If you buy the game at launch, you basically get the first season pass paid for, but it seems like it functions like a battle pass in Fortnite, where It's not like, oh, you buy that and you get the content. It's you buy that and then you have the privilege of then playing a bunch of stuff. Then you get to earn
the content. Yeah.
To earn the content, which feels a little weird.
Yeah. Yeah. The big difference between this and Fortnite or like Halo or Apex or any free of that is that those are all free.
And it is also they're holding Cloud and Squall from Final Fantasy VII and VIII, respectively. Those are the two characters in the first season. There's also a bunch of other stuff that you can get as well. And it seems like, I think it's in Chocobo GP might be where you earn Gil, which is the third currency. And I believe that that currency will be used to buy things in the season passes, which I think they call them prize passes. So Chocobo GP is a game that I mean, outside of not being able to play Chocobo GP, like what's there, it's good.
Sure.
Like if I were to score that, like it'd be, you know, not super high, but like it'd be positive. Like don't really have many complaints of what I have played so far. The post-launch season stuff is a little weird. And Chocobo GP, the longevity of that is something that if that has a longer tail, like this game could be way cooler. But it might not. I don't know.
Huh. Yeah. So like good game with a questionable online future structure. Interesting. Yeah. I'd still check out the free version. I'm curious. Yeah.
No, I mean, I would, maybe we can get listeners, hit us up on Twitter or something, and maybe we'll try to get a bunch of people playing Chocobo GP.
I'd be curious if from the free version, I can buy the battle pass.
I don't know. Because that might be a workaround with it, because maybe it is right.
Like, if that's all that is, and, like, you're only paying for the single player, like, that's...
Alta is the name of your Moogle friend. Like, you'll get the titular Chocobo, probably a Moogle, and there's a couple other characters that, like, I feel like the 3 to 5 characters might be what you have access to out of the 20-plus that are in the regular game.
Yeah.
But, you know, maybe you do want to buy that battle pass when you're doing just the free version. And get Cloud and Squall and other goodies. Maybe that, like, I don't know. There's some question marks about this game.
Yeah.
Definitely. I'm literally going into my review right now to set it as score pending.
Yeah. Well, it'll be interesting to see how that. This is not Switch exclusive, right? This is coming out.
It is Switch exclusive.
Okay. That's a bad plan. Yeah. If you're going to have are there online multiplayer modes that aren't Chocobo GP that require 64 people? Okay.
Well, no, that don't require 64 people. There are other online modes.
Okay.
You could do like a regular race in online mode.
Yeah, I worry about the size of their player base.
Yeah.
This needs to be a game that's out on everything, including PC and have cross-play. If this is Switch only, that player base isn't going to last for long enough to
keep
do.
In mind it's coming out around the same time as noted Square Enix Smart Project Babylon's Fall, so maybe just saying something about the publisher. I mean, like, I'm sorry, I apologize, Square Enix, you are releasing Chrono Cross in April. We're cool. Yeah. But there's some things, maybe question marks.
Yeah, there, I mean, as has been noted, every day is another day without them adding Project Sylphie to backwards compatibility. So we already knew they were batshit insane.
The hunger strike is continuing.
The hunger strike continues. You know what's a game made by a Japanese developer that is better than Babylon's Fall, probably?
I don't even feel like probably.
Well, I haven't played Babylon's Fall. I don't want to, maybe Babylon's Fall is secretly a masterpiece. Of, like,
most acclaimed game ever or whatever.
Yeah.
Elden Ring, which played a little bit of it, but you have played a lot more. But, like, this game's dope.
Yeah, and I feel like it's relevant to talk about. And we've talked about this a little bit behind the scenes, but, like, and it's, you know, I don't want to be somebody who every time they see an open world game is like, well, that's clearly based on Breath of the Wild. But... Elden Ring is one of those games, along with something like Immortals Fenyx Rising, where it is very admittedly inspired by some elements of Breath of the Wild. And unlike Immortals Fenyx Rising, I think Elden Ring is the first game I've played that takes that inspiration but rather than just copying it, actually understands why Breath of the Wild worked. And it's really good. Now, granted, I am somebody who I wouldn't call myself like a hardcore Dark Souls fan, but I enjoy a Dark Souls or two when the mood strikes. But this is the most engrossed I have ever been in a Souls game ever. It's open world in the sense, not in like the Ubisoft sense of climb these towers and get all these icons and go to all the icons and collect all the things, but rather just, all right, we opened the door. Here's the world. We're not really going to give you a good sense of where you're even supposed to go. Good luck. Nothing's marked on your map. I did not realize until many hours into the game that I could find maps in the game that made my map more detailed. And there's a lot of stuff like that that I know some people don't like, and that's fair. But there's a lot of stuff like that where it's you kind of come to understand the game by playing it and by exploring and by just trying things, which I love in an open world game. Some people may not. But for me, this is like an ideal open world.
I think the thing that strikes me, and I'm still like very early in it, only like 2 hours in, basically. I got out of some of the first area, explored some of the map, and got my ass kicked a lot. Because this is, unlike you, I played a little bit of Demon's Souls and bounced off it hard in like 2009.
That's a bad game.
It definitely kind of put me off of Souls games. And I wound up like messing around in Dark Souls 2, but like just didn't really stick with it. Because part of it is that what is kind of appealing to Elden Ring with me is that with those games being, I know they're not like total straight lines. Like they're
right.
But like the fact that it is that like forward progression, what strikes me about Elden Ring is that like it is, if I'm getting my ass kicked, I can just grind. Or I can go to a completely different part of the map. And
yeah.
I just haven't had the time to sit down with it. It hasn't been any disinterest. I've been thinking about the game a lot. Also, right now we're, you know, a week after release, so it's all anybody's talking about.
Yes.
But I've been thinking about the game a lot and excited to kind of sit down and just have like time to sink my teeth into it, because of the fact that like even if I'm kind of bad at these games, even if just the concept of these games that death is punishing and happens a lot, like it's just not really, or like the really technical combat in some respects, like that's not my preferred mode of play. Like Breath of the Wild structure and difficulty, like that is, it's a good example of like that is what I want out of a video game. I want like,
yeah,
death doesn't really have that much of a punishment in those open world games. I can just mess around and it's a good time. And Elden Ring is definitely a little bit more punishing, but overall, like, okay, yeah, you can lose some runes.
Yeah,
it's also pretty easy to get runes if you want to get them.
That's what makes a huge difference in this, is that it's like I can go to a boss and go, okay, I need to have this skill higher.
Yeah.
I'm going to go do a lap around this field and just farm a bunch of runes and level that up. And that's great. I don't have to just like do the same hallway over and over again like I would in any other Souls game. I can just go have fun. And like I might find some things, and I've like found optional bosses and killed them while I'm doing that. Like it's, yeah, there's, even when I'm stuck, I don't feel stuck.
And it's the fact that there are so many fast travel points. I barely scratch the surface of that, but like it is a game that it does a good job of like pointing you like, this is where Margaret is, go there. But also it's like, nah, I'm just going to go left, see what's over here and explore there and come across some boss that kicks the crap out of me and I'm woefully underprepared for. But you can also, you know, beat up on easier enemies, kind of get used to the combat system. I'm playing a vagabond, so trying to get my parrying down, because that seems like it'll be a very important tool. But there's that part of me that's also like, maybe I should like mess around and try a magic user, because I haven't done anything with magic yet.
The nice thing with the Souls games, and especially one where you can farm so easily, is that no matter what kind of character you start with, you can very easily just go, I want to do magic now, and just dump a few levels into magic and just do that now.
But yeah, it's a game that I'm going to mess around with, but I who knows? Maybe I think I said before I got the game, that's either like I'm going to bounce off this really hard, or I'm going to get like super into Souls game at the end of it, which I actually don't know if that's going to happen or not, but
yeah,
I mean, we'll see. Like, I'm probably going to be slowly rocking this game for a long time just because of the way my life is. I don't sit down to play Xbox that often, as evidenced by the fact that I, to this day, have not played Halo Infinite.
I will say this is one of the first times on my Series X where I have felt like, man, I really wish this was on Switch, because yeah, every day I go to work and then I have my break at work and I'm like, man, I sure would like to play Elden Ring right now. And it's not on Game Pass, so I can't stream it.
Yeah.
Not that it's
it's made me want to play Skyrim on my Switch.
Yeah, I thought about re-downloading Dark Souls on my Switch, but I feel like that might confuse me because it would be like just different enough.
Yeah.
That it would mess me up.
I forgot. Yeah, only Dark Souls came to Switch.
Just the first one. Good point. Yeah. But yeah, just the first one. I should also note, because I don't want to give Arceus crap for it and then let this one get away with it. this game looks really nice. However, boy, does it just not have a frame rate at all.
Oh yeah, it's kind of a little rough. Like, it works.
Yeah.
Like, part of the appeal, and I think it's something that, like, I mean, I still love Arceus a whole lot.
Mm-hmm.
Is that, like, the jank is part of the appeal. And that's something that I've settled on with Pokemon, and it seems like it's also something that people like about the Souls games too, is that, like, the jank is almost like part of the fun.
Yeah,
like being able to cheese certain elements, being able to, like looking at how, like, oh, like, look at that animation clip in a weird way.
Yeah, all of that stuff, I think, is that's kind of expected from the series at this point, good or bad. That being said, if it could run at 60 frames per second consistently, that would be nice, because it'll you'll be like 60 frames per second and then you'll turn around and see a boss and it's like 30 now. And like you talked about, we were talking about Mario Kart, you know, when you're on like Mario Kart 8 on Wii U and you switch from 60 frames per second playing single player and then 30 frames per second split screen, you feel that.
Yeah, it's rough.
And so, yeah, when that frame rate goes flying all over the place, you feel, and especially on a game where like frame perfect reactions are occasionally required. I will need all of the frames, please. Thank you. but other than that, that's my one complaint. Hopefully it gets cleaned up. I do know that the console versions are significantly superior to the PC version in that respect.
Yeah, so I've heard the PC version is rough.
PC version sounds like a hard time, which is par for the course for From Software on PC. But yeah, other than that, incredible game and can't wait to play more of it. I'm distracted by Aztec right now, but I'm looking forward to going back to it.
Yeah, we'll probably be talking about it more. We were supposed to have Jordan Rudek on this episode, but he has a sick child and he's just getting over being sick himself.
Yeah.
And he's been, I think he might have put 57 million hours into Elden Ring.
Presumably. It has been one day. So I think maybe time works different in Canada.
Yeah, that's what it is. They actually have 36 hours in a day.
Yeah.
But Jordan's also reviewing Triangle Strategy, that by the time you listen to this episode, our review will be up. He gave it a 9.5 out of 10.
He loved it.
Reading his review got me to finally start playing the demo. It's pretty cool. The story is more interesting than I expected.
Yeah, I think I'm going to grab the because you can transfer your progress, right?
Yeah, yeah. You play up to the end of chapter three. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I'll probably pick up the demo. And because I like Final Fantasy Tactics, the original one on PS1. I like Shining Force. Like, if I'm going to play a turn-based RPG, I'd like it to be Tactics. So this one looks like something I might actually get into.
Yeah.
So I might give it a shot.
And like, it is a little story heavy to start. Like, I've only had one battle and I'm like halfway through the demo. But also, according to Jordan from his time with the review, is like that it's a little slow going in the beginning, but then it kind of gets into high gear as you get further on. But I went from being like, I don't know if I'm gonna bother with Triangle Strategy to like, well, now you have piqued my interest, sir. But we'll probably have Jordan on in somewhere in the future to talk about Triangle Strategy, and when that happens, we'll probably also talk about more Elden Ring, which I'm hoping to play more of it in the next week or so. But yeah, that's our game talk. We have a listener tweet. It's not even listener mail.
Yeah, tweeting at us is an option.
Yeah, I remembered. I was like, I don't forget this, and I almost forgot it. But Jared EA said to us on Twitter, "Hello, I was wondering what game would you guys make based on your life interests, a la Miyamoto? Fostering kittens. I'd make a game where you play as a kitten learning cat skills and switch to an RTS game where you manage a cat's life in various locales. Thanks." That sounds like a dope game.
I'd play that. I'd play the shit out of that. You should become a game designer and make. I hope that Jared is secretly a game designer. He just pitched it to us, and then he's going to be like, "It's on Steam Greenlight right now," and I'll be like, "Fuck!" And then I'll have to go play it.
There's a lot of Cat Cafe games, but I feel like they haven't there is that game Stray coming out on, I think it's PS5 Epic exclusive or something, where you play as a stray cat and you do cat things.
Okay, I'm a little scared of that game because I feel like they're going to do something like kill the cat. Which if I had a PS5, I would wind up smashing it if that were to happen.
That'd be a waste of money.
Yeah. Yeah. You can't. I'm too attached to cats to do that.
Yeah. No, definitely. Yeah. I love my animals. They're the best.
But I don't. So the problem I have with this question.
My interests are video games.
Is that right. I'm like, well, I think I would make Star Fox. So I'm trying to think of interests that aren't video games, but then I'm making like Star Wars games.
I kind of struggle because like a lot of my interests are linked to video games. I feel like there's never been a good wiffle ball game.
There you go.
It's been ages since I've played myself a good game of wiffle ball. But that was a thing I did a lot, like middle school, high school, like got really into it, could do a lot of like neat curves and crap. But I feel like that's something where like you could do something fun with that, because wiffle ball does have like I assume that like the I mean, I think they were all amateur leagues, because it's not like wiffle balls. Maybe it's on ESPN the Ocho or whatever. But there's like formal rules for wiffle ball and like, you know, leagues out there. I'd check that out. I'd be down for a good deep wiffle ball sim.
Yeah, there was an era around like the PS2 where it felt like companies were like, well, that Madden thing seems to be working. And they just started making like random sports and things that weren't quite sports into video games, and then like putting a year on them as if there was going to be more than one.
I think they only made one arena football game. I did get that. It wasn't great.
Yeah, that's a good, we need to get back to that era.
Another sports game. My wife used to play roller derby. There actually is a pretty solid roller derby game that came out on WiiWare. So have fun never playing it, really? Everybody. Roller City Jams or something. It was pretty good.
I feel like that's, what was the Genesis game that was it Skitchen? Does that count as a roller derby, like a street roller derby? No,
that's skateboarding, isn't that?
No, you're on rollerblades or skates. I don't remember.
Skitchen was skateboarding.
Well, I think you can drag yourself from the back of the car by whatever means you want. I don't think there's a specific set of wheels tied to it.
There is aggressive inline, which was it wasn't Activision, but it was definitely like a Tony Hawk competitor that I played a lot of. And that is, you know, you're on inline skates. You're not on a skateboard, but it functions the same way as a Tony Hawk game. I played that game on GameCube within the past 5 years or so. And you know how like the Tony Hawk games like make fun of cops and have like girls in bikinis and stuff?
Yes, it was a time.
Aggressive Inline is like, they're like, okay, we're not going to be quite BMX XXX, but like, we're going to go for it, guys. And I just felt grossly uncomfortable playing that game in like that 2017.
We've said it before, but it's funny to go back to Activision games from the like late 90s, early 2000s, and then look at Activision now and go, oh, well, yeah.
Like, I mean, let's point out that the developer of, I think they also made Spider-Man, Tony Hawk, the name of the developer is Neversoft.
That could mean anything. I can tell you what it means.
It means means erect penis. Neversoft.
So does that also apply to Microsoft then?
maybe. But like, yeah, I think that came out that like that's where the name for Neversoft came from, was like a bunch of dudes be like boners.
That sounds like the guys that made the Tony Hawk games.
Like, and then, like, you play Tony Hawk, and you're like, oh, okay, I get it. Like, the games are very good.
No, they're great, but they are, like, those are definitely, you know when you watch, like, original series Star Trek now, And you just go like, oh boy. Like Tony Hawk is going to be the equivalent of that. Where like you play that.
Like, I can still appreciate this, but like, man, some of that stuff is Shatner.
Like, oh boy. Hey. Yeah, like if you're watching it with your kids, you have to like explain that like times were different.
This was a different era. And you put it on a streaming platform, you need to have like the, just so you know.
That like, borderline. Yeah, like it has to be like, yeah, back then women didn't have rights. And this is just how it works. Enjoy. This was progressive at the time.
But yeah, like I like roller derby's cool as hell. And it's another thing where like, cause well, my wife was on a team that wasn't like formally in a league, but then it was around we had a kid. So that was part of the reason why she stopped playing, at least for then. But then one of our really good friends was on a team that like we like helped with like the when they had events, we would be there selling tickets and stuff. But like games are fun as hell. There was like a 2-year period where like that would be most of my weekends would be like, let's go see some roller derby, and it was great. But like, yeah, make a good video game of that. I feel like there's a lot of potential.
Yeah, I feel like all of my non-video game interests are like video production and visual effects and things that would make very boring simulation games. So
it would probably be a lot of work, and it wouldn't be worth it because it would just like stress people out. But like finding like making a parenthood life sim, I don't think I'd want to play that game because I'm living it.
Yeah,
you'd probably lower
the birth rate.
Yeah, yeah. But I feel like that could be an interesting game. But I do like this kitten RTS game.
Yeah. No, I this question's bullshit. Because you stole the best answer in your question. So that's cheating.
And I think about like my other non-game interests. It's like golf. It's like, well, that's why I play the PGA Tour game.
There are like, there are already games of all of my. Yeah, I don't know what I do that isn't. Someone could make a good Star Trek game, I suppose. That'd be nice.
Damn, they haven't done that, have they?
There was like an RTS on PC that was okay. And that's about it. But yeah, I feel like we've covered that. You should write in with with games that you would make based off of your life, or just send them to us on Twitter. Neil, you, like we said, you ran out of money for your therapist.
Yeah.
And you've been going through some things.
I guess start at the beginning. So if you guys really like Mario Kart 8 Deluxe and you want to get real mad, just a Berube wrote an editorial. Kind of, I mean, Justin and I are on the same page that we both really like Mario Kart Tour, the mobile game. And he wrote an editorial that I mostly agree with the spirit of. It's just the title when we put it up on YouTube was 48 Tracks Won't Save Mario Kart 8 Deluxe, which is admittedly a little much. But then like it was definitely like Justin being a little bit of a troll.
Justin believes in that title 100%.
Yes,
like
yes,
that, he totally from Justin's does. Perspective that title is 100% true, and I'm pretty sure we've all titled a video from that mindset at some point.
Yeah But I mean, but what he was saying is that like, you know, at this point, like Mario Kart 8 is, it came out in 2014. And like, really, like, yes, it is selling off the shelves. It does not need any saving. Mm-hmm. But like, they added a battle mode, some DLC like 6 years ago, and now they're doing these 48 courses. But Justin's point is that like, this isn't gonna, it's still the same game. They just added more races, which is honestly, like, I'm kind of looking forward to playing Mario Kart 8 Deluxe. Sure, it's gonna be fine. But as part of this discussion, when the video went up, I went for the first time in a long time, because I don't even think I read all of these when my review for Mario Kart 8 came out, when I gave it a 7.5 out of 10, and then people legitimately sent me death threats. But I went and skimmed through the almost 300 comments on the review on NintendoReport.com. You could do the same if you really want to. Honestly,
it's
I don't recommend
time.
It.
Yeah, brightens your day.
But going through it, like it did, it, I mean, it's the kind of thing where, like, I reread my review too, and like, I agree with everything that I said.
This Neil guy knows what he's talking about.
Yeah, like it's been, you know, at this point 8 years since I wrote that review. I don't really disagree. Like, I would write it again.
I think you did.
But I mean, I did, and then I bumped it up because guess what? Like, that new battle mode's pretty good. Like, they made it fine. But it just makes me think about reviews as a process and like just the philosophy of like how people look at these and the undercurrent of people that like drove by in the comments that were like, "You ruined the Metacritic." I forgot about this because I think it was actually Barubi was a person that would always like bring this up because it is very funny. Where someone left a comment that's like all like lower capped, and there's the line of like, it's like you affected the Metacritic, and Metacritic is spelled wrong, and then like the last bit is just like, you fucked up, Neil, which is just so funny to me, because it is like I didn't like the game. Obviously, the game had the last laugh. Like, it was the right, best the selling fine. Game on Wii U. It has sold like it's gonna sell 50 million games. Copies very soon, probably more.
It's one of the best-selling games of all time.
Yeah, on any platform. I think it's like top five.
Yeah, it's okay. It'll be okay, despite Neil's best efforts.
Yeah, but it's also all those things that like accusations of us like trying to purposely rig this. How like we're a Nintendo site, we shouldn't. It's also depressing and sobering to see like that's how people talk about this shit now too.
Oh yeah, that still it's the comes same up. Stuff
about and like even I mean just with all the console wars and nonsense, but yeah, it just got me thinking about that terrible time where people wanted me dead, for video game score.
Yeah,
that I liked the game. There was a while where I didn't like the game because of the reaction to the review,
and it's a bummer because I've said countless times that 7.5 is my favorite review score. Because it's where you get the most creative game design. Mario Kart 8 being an exception to that rule, but still, it's something where like 7.8 is a positive, or 7.5, you should have given a 7.8, that would have done it. 7.5 is a positive score, and to be treated like you hated the game kind of makes you hate the game. Like, I liked the game, I gave it a good score. But I kind of don't like it now because everybody's telling me that I apparently hated it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's happened with like a lot of reviews that I've written over the years. Like, I think even Mario Maker was a game in which I had like legitimately like PTSD from the Mario Kart 8 review. Because I think I gave Mario Maker, which would have been year plus after Mario Kart 8. And I think I gave Mario Maker an 8. And part of that was because if you remember from the Wii U Mario Maker, is like it had all the weird stuff where it's like, oh, you have to play for 10 days before you can actually have the privilege of using everything. And there were some weird things about like discovery. Like, I forget exactly what my cons were. Some of the stuff I think they actually like cleaned up in updates. But I think I said in the review something around the phrase that like this game is magic. And someone was like, you can't call this game magic. You gave it an 8.
Yeah.
It's like, but like, it's really good. There's flaws.
And coming back to the 7.5 thing again, it's you're allowed to really dig a game while also being aware of its failures. And to acknowledge those failures is not to say you don't like the game. I mean, we've talked at length about, you know, well, I just commented on the performance in Elden Ring being bad, and I love that game. We've talked about the graphics in Pokemon Arceus being ugly as shit, and we both love that game. I think it's probably the best, like, for my money, I think it's probably the best Pokemon game ever made. But that doesn't make the graphics better.
I have a weird thing with Pokemon games where it's just like, I can't go back. because I would think like I had this conversation, I think it was on like the NWR Discord, that like I think Heart Gold and Soul Silver are maybe the best games in the series. Also, I'm never playing them again because there's so many quality of life things that have been added to the series. Because
if you do, you won't think that anymore.
Yeah But like in the time, like I think those games were incredible.
My wife, after finishing Arceus, was still in a Pokemon mood, so she hadn't done Brilliant Diamond Shining Pearl yet, so she went back to do those, and she was like, these, like, this is good, but like I've seen something better.
Yeah.
And I don't think I want to do this anymore. Like I like, and that's how I feel. It's kind of my concern with Scarlet and Violet.
Scarlet and Violet. Although, so I know when that news first went up, or when the news first went up on a Sunday morning for some reason, But when that first went up, I looked at the trailer and I was like, that doesn't really tell you that it's going to be like Arceus. Right. And I still
which
think
one is
need,
it?
We need to see them show actual gameplay that proves like this is how catching is going to be handled. This is battling.
Yep.
Because not going to believe it until I see it. But there are some shots and some screenshots that make it pretty clear that you're going to be battling in the overworld.
Yes, I've seen those. And yeah, my question remains, how do I catch Pokemon? Because that's like, you'll note, like, my two favorite Pokemon games are Arceus and Let's Go, which are two Pokemon games that took a very different approach to how wild Pokemon work.
Yeah.
And I think that makes a huge difference in like the repetitive nature of those games. Having a trainer battle and a wild encounter be two completely bespoke experiences.
It's the thing about Let's Go that I like. I think Let's Go made me realize that like Gen 1 is so type limited, but but like what Let's Go does with catching Pokemon and the fact that it is like it, you don't fight wild Pokemon, you just catch them. I kind of like that better. Like I like having that, like that little bit. I understand that, like, I mean, the way they do it in Arceus, I'm fine with too.
Right. You have well, the Arceus is kind of just, like an expansion of that same idea.
But you can actually fight a wild Pokemon and, you know, beat it for experience points or catch it when you have the health low. Like that balance worked for me because it still made it like you had different tools to do different things and it was slightly different experiences along the way. Yep. And I hope Scarlet and Violet does that. Either way, I'll be there just because I've kind of accepted this point, just that like any new mainline Pokemon game, like I'm there. I played Brilliant Diamond Shining Pearl, there for Arceus, there for Sword, even there for Ultra Sun, Ultra Moon, even though that reminded me that I don't like playing the same game over, but it's like slightly different. Although right now I'm debating trying to get a copy of Shield and do it where you have the expansion pass as you play the game as opposed to as post game.
Oh, sure.
But that's also, I have a child and playing that game with a kid, even if I'm replaying it, would be pretty fun.
You should play Let's Go in co-op mode, because lest we forget, Let's Go was a two-player Pokemon RPG.
Which
is like incredible.
That. Yeah.
Please do that again at some point. I feel like after Arceus, even if Scarlet and Violet aren't exactly what I want, because I'm not the biggest Pokemon fan, I feel like they've earned me kind of blindly trying another one. If they can take some lessons from Arceus, this doesn't have to be the exact same thing, but if they can take some lessons from Arceus and work them into a more traditional Pokemon, like I'll give that a go. I'm willing to hear you out. I'm also impressed that you made this game in 2 weeks. So like, I want to see how that went. Cause like, holy shit, Pokemon Company, calm down.
Slow down. Jesus. Like, I think we had a conversation before this Pokemon presents. It's like, I wonder what the holiday 22 Pokemon game is going to be. Like, is it going to be Detective Pikachu? Are they going to do like another
spin-off or something? Surely it's something that they like announced a long time ago and have been working on. It will by no means be another Game Freak Pokemon game.
I'm baffled that like Gen 9 is here already. I thought for their own sake they were going to take another year, but sure, guys, like I'll play it. I'm excited.
Yeah. And like, even if, I guess that second team must be way bigger than I thought they were. Cause I mean, obviously this was in development at the same time as Arceus. Like,
and
that's why
I have that little bit of caution as to like, is this going to have all the learnings from Arceus built in?
Because right. Because if it was made in parallel.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Unless they like, were like, okay, this is what we're doing in Arceus. And they're like, okay, like we'll do some of that in Scarlet and Violet as well. I'll be curious to see just what exactly this game even is. Like, it definitely feels like it's going to be a sequel of sorts. I mean, by the fact that like it kind of literally is, like this will be the follow up to Sword and Shield.
Yeah,
and like I expect it to be similar to Sword and Shield, just in a new region. But how
at like, the same time, Sword and Shield were definitely working their way toward Arceus. You know, a lot of the elements of like the wild areas or whatever they're called.
Yep.
Like that stuff was starting to be there. So maybe if they knew where they were going overall, I don't know what like the engine structure of these games are, but like, I don't know if this is running in like the same engine. It certainly looks much prettier than Arceus, I think. But
I think also it doesn't have like that filter that Arceus has.
Yeah. Well, Arceus, yeah, was trying to be
it's like the cel shade thing or whatever.
It's yeah, it's like they wanted to do cel shaded, but they didn't quite commit to it or something. Yeah, they don't quite pull it off. This one feels like it has a much cleaner, like, visual identity. Maybe Arceus was the one that was made by the really small Pokemon team, and
yeah, maybe.
And this
maybe.
Is the big Game Freak team, and that's why.
And that's why it does seem like it was, you know, put together with really good rubber bands.
yeah, it put together with 100% focus on the gameplay and graphics that technically work.
Yeah, and it's like, and it's weird to think that, like, I mean, I feel like Arceus and even Brilliant Diamond, Shining Pearl, like, they both feel like they were kind of rushed, and I enjoyed the hell out of both of them.
Yeah. I think, but honestly, I don't totally get, granted, my only experience with Brilliant Diamond Shining Pearl is watching my wife play it, but I look at that game and I think that game looks really nice. I don't really get any of the pushback on that game's graphics.
So here's the thing with Brilliant Diamond Shining Pearl is, and maybe they've had updates, I don't know, but like, there's a lot of like weird hitches. Like, whenever you go into any trainer battle or wild Pokemon battle, there's like a very discernible, like, the game freezes for a few seconds.
Oh, okay.
It's stuff like that. And like, some of the walk animations like are super awkward and weird, but like, I think the game itself looks nice. Like, it's a cute little art style.
I do notice that it's like very, like, the cutscenes are like match the blocking of the original exactly. So there's lots of weird, like, why don't you just walk diagonally across this room? No, I shall zigzag. but the water shader is gorgeous. My wife was playing out, she walked by like a pool of water. I was like, that looks incredible. Why can't Arceus use that water shader? That looks great.
And like, some of like the fog overlay stuff and Brilliant Diamond Shining Pearl, like it looks nice, but it's not, when I refer to like that those kind of any technical problems with Brilliant Diamond Shining Pearl, it's those weird little hitches,
more
that feel it, like unoptimized as opposed to like ugly looking.
Sure. Which is, I mean, once again, that game we do know was made in like a year at
most. I mean not that I want to have any spotlight on the terrible leakers of the world, but when that game leaked, there was like a patch that went out. Like, it's part of the reason why we got review code like I think it was the Friday before the Wednesday embargo. It's something insane. But the reason we got the code so late is because there was like a patch that like fixed a lot of garbage.
Sure.
Like that game was coming in hot. And I mean, the final game's fine. There's just, you know, a little.
Yeah, it seems as, and once again, I didn't even really see it outside of Jordan's review at launch. So seeing it now, it sure looks fine to me.
It was one out of my exhaustive game of the year list. It was one of my favorite port honorable mentions.
Yeah, I thought it looked nice.
Yeah,
I think that's about all we've got for this week.
Yeah.
So once
short
again,
episode.
Yeah, supposedly. Relatively short, an hour and like 15 minutes. But yeah, once again, if you have any listener mail, if you'd like to pitch a really good game to us, you can do that by emailing us at connectivity@nintendoworldreport.com. or hitting us up on Twitter at ConnectivityNWR. If you're listening to this somewhere where you can review it, you could do that. That'd be a very nice thing for you to do. You could share it with a friend. Thanks for listening, everybody. Thanks, Neil. Bye.
Thank you.
This was made possible by our generous supporters on Patreon. Check out patreon.com/NWR for all the details.